So the disciplines which I'm most interested in are social theory and aesthetics. In the institute I'm working in, and also I was a founder of, is a multimedia institute from Zagreb, Croatia, which I founded in 1999. So far we have, and this was actually also the most important fact, that in 2000 we have opened a club, that cultural club MAMA in Zagreb, which is a physical interface of the activities of our institute. And so far what we have been mostly doing is publishing, promoting diverse marginal positions, be it in politics, art, activism, theory, and yes, so this is a whole range of activities we do, but maybe for this purpose it's most interesting, and so my background would be as a publisher of advanced theory or new theory, recent theory, in the context of Yugoslavia or ex-Yugoslavia. Yep, so maybe to the first interesting to say that, again, Yugoslavia and ex-Yugoslavian position is somewhat different to the Russian. So some of the authors of the 20th century aesthetics especially were much more widely accepted or received here in ex-Yugoslavia. And so it's for some of the specifically Russian topics, I guess that we have done some steps. So even within the socialist framework. Then the second question would be how my institute, do we change this institutional framework by our informal education or the discursive interventions we do, either by publishing, by inviting people, or even also by promoting some new practices. This is, I would say, really the difficult question, and we are always on the brink to say, oh, now this does not help anything, so the framework is too stiff, it can't be changed. As an informal institution, maybe it would be better for us just to stick to this small circles, to those closed off circles. So this is the question we very, very often pose, but then again, I would say Zagreb and Croatia are actually just so small environments that if you're doing something for years, and if you have some kind of continuity in your activities, at some point you have to assume this role of Kulturträger, of this someone who introduces or who is even the representative of that culture. Even all of our imperatives when we started the MAMA and Multimedia Institute were to be anti-representative, actually to embrace all those post-structuralist theories and to somehow to skip off this functioning as a representative of something or someone, and also somehow to sidestep the state, so the Croatian state. But somehow, as we experienced and as we have grown up, that this is in such a small environment, this is impossible. So at some point, either it is because of the money you have to get to run your institution, or it is actually the state itself. So the be it, for example, the Ministry of Culture, the local municipal cultural institutions, actually at some point they approach you. Actually, they want you, they also want to finance the things you do. And so this is, I would say, we have a very, very complex, foremost ambivalent situation. It's almost impossible to have a clear cut to say that that something is really bad or something is really good. And this I would say was our lesson. Regards of education, so again to come to a more specific topic, it's in regards of education, I would say what we wanted to achieve, we failed in it. Actually, we wanted, of course, to be more visible in the sense that even within the university context, those things will be somehow received, will be processed. But then again, we succeeded in those things actually that we didn't want to get or to reach. So somehow, and those things are not necessarily are not less ambitious than those initial plans we have. So you have this kind of the conscious activity you try to promote things, but those somehow unconscious aspects of the things you are doing, somehow they succeed in producing something which was maybe out of sight for at the initial stage, but somehow also produce wonderful effects. Maybe it would be best to, I guess, most of them now within the question of the institutions. I would say foremost that I would that the institutional critique or the aesthetics as a kind of institutional critique, which is today the dominant kind of dealing with the world of art and the aesthetics, is actually so dominant that it's somehow impossible to get another kind of analysis. So this is one thing. So it's very easy to somehow put institutions in question, and somehow you easily can reference many theorists who give you some then a legitimation that you are right as a kind of anarchic person who then tries to question the institutions. But this is just one thing, and I would say this is a very important step. This is just the first step. So I would say that this kind of institution, or this bastard of this hybrid institution critique, somehow is embraced by all the artists or most of the theorists I know, I have contact, but this is actually just the first step. And what we actually want to do is, and also our activities within the Multimedia Institute, actually to embrace the institution critique, but to make a step further, to actually also then somehow try to do also kind of policy making, but on a level of abstraction, which for, and there I guess we fail sometimes, that this kind of meta critique we do is somehow for most of the people completely abstract, completely dry, completely non-sexy. But this actually is level where we want to do most of our interventions. And this is, for example, the level where you don't have, as your partners, you don't have usually, or most of the times, you don't have artists, but mostly you have some kind of either politicians or policy makers. And this, at some point, I would say, there we fail, because at some point, this kind of abstract articulation of our own interests is completely neglected or seen to be somehow too far-fetched by most of the people we know. This is something we really fail. So this is the somehow it's I would say we actually also maybe that we fail in articulating this kind of position where you actually do not try to change the content but actually to change the infrastructure. This is almost impossible to articulate that there's a huge difference which really matters. So this is something we fail. But then again, on the discursive level, with the books we published, ranging from French theory, from Jean-Luc Nancy, Bagieu, then from the Italians, Agamben, Hart, Negri, also the German Frankfurt-style theory. This is something, I guess, when we see that we actually have that, even in those places, I really would not guess that there will be somehow reference that this kind of theory was somehow received, but really, but by ways which were not predictable. This I would say. This is always again. Of course, this is very. It gives you some kind of satisfaction that you see that which you do has been embraced. But mostly, again, this happens not by chance, but it's. It's not completely chance, it's not completely aleatory, but somehow it's very, very strange in those ways. And I would say, yes, that at some point we are really happy if someone then yearly two or three new persons come in, approach us, and then we can do something with them. This is really that good or that bad, that even just two or three new persons with whom you somehow give something and then those person give you something back. This is actually that which you can get out of even of such a wide, maybe it's also some intense kind of informal education, not more. We have tried it, from our own experience, we have tried it several times. It depends largely on which kind of academy it is or which faculty it is. But again, I would say we have failed in it. So it was a mutual failing of both those institutions, also of us. Maybe it would be the question also what was in the purpose letter of our Russian colleagues, which actually they have stated that maybe new theory could change the thing, that it could change the infrastructure, that it could change somehow also the consciousness. Actually, I would say quite the contrary. It's not the problem that we need new theory, but actually is that even that theory which is considered to be old was never well received. That all those arts academies, especially in the Eastern Europe, have actually, so in regards of the aesthetics, have not taught anything to people. Actually, that even those knowledges you consider that they were received, that they were taught, but actually this was also not very well received. And in that regards, I would say, it would be for me, I would say for everybody, if someone asked me which kind of theory would you propose to people to read, I would say, again, yeah, take Plato, take Aristoteles, and not just to be conservative, but actually that if someone, this is my then opinion as a philosopher, if someone, for example, really carefully reads and interprets, for example, Plato, his Symposium, or his Sophistes and Parmenides, those kind of very old-fashioned texts, if someone carefully reads and interprets it, he actually has entered, or she has entered, really this kind of alternative method of this kind of really opening up the questions and opening up the consciousnesses, and then at that point you don't have to say, aha, Plato is a problem, so we have to get, I don't know, we have to get Badiou or Ancien or anybody else, so because they are new and they are recent, but actually that if you have just taken up one text but have done it well, that you could enter actually those problematics. And this, I would say, in some regard, is something which is important to me. It's not actually just to be inflationary in regards of references, because it's very easy to say, aha, yes, now you need just another new reference which was not consumed by the capitalist or by the artistic system. But actually that you have to really to step back and to say, no, we have maybe to stop this kind of inflation, to make this machine really to break it up, and to say we have to step back and maybe to somehow to meditate in the same, or in a sense we have to contemplate again on, not on some notions which you then really hold as a sacred, but actually on the way, actually on the methods, on the way how, on the process how. Not just the thinking, not just the reflection foregoes, but also the artistic production. And then in the sense, I would say, less is beautiful in that sense, not more. And not more theory will actually somehow save us from the conservative arts academies or faculties here, or the humanities here in Eastern Europe, but actually less theory. And then in regard, I would say, yes, this actually has been also the crux of the postmodern theory. I would just say that, for example, in Paul de Man, it was most obvious in his famous essays, Resistance to Theory. Paul de Man has convincingly shown that actually the theory somehow consists of itself, that theory itself is somehow anti-theoretical. And in that sense, that the theory in that sense does not need any kind of support to criticize itself, but actually the theory itself is somehow always is putting into question its own activities. And in that sense, I would say I would say that even arts, in, if you take up the analogy with Paul Damanian, with theory as anti-theory, I would say even that also arts, art itself, in all its facets, actually also can be the most productive critique of art. And you necessarily don't need to have a highbrow theory to be productive, innovative, criticizing that which is existing. And in some sense, yeah, so my conclusion would be less theory. And then again, maybe I now come to the question of the geopolitical system, which is actually has been proposed by our Russian colleagues. I would say it's not the question how to. It's not so much for me the question that to westernize the Eastern discourse. It's not the question how to import Western theory into former Eastern Europe or the now Eastern Europe, but it's actually the question that since the fall of Berlin Wall, much of the West has been Easternized in a way that this kind of low competence, this kind of this was a phrase which we got from the Russian and the all of the in the Serb creation. I do not know if what will be the Russian origin. There was a concept of uravnilovka, of something of not just of a lazy of or a low efficient attitude towards the work, but also some kind of nearly fatalist kind of attitude towards everything. Maybe it could be also described as a kind of cynicism. And I would say that now the West pretty much looks also like the East has looked within so up until the fall of the Berlin Wall. And for again, I would say for me, less theory, not more. Yeah, you can speak. And again, I would say no, but this is this kind of flagrant attitude. So you have to beat yourself, you have to punish yourself. So this is this kind of institutional critique attitude. So you have to somehow to see or to look through the institutions, you have to criticize them, you have somehow to gain your righteousness, to regain your authenticity. And this is the kind of promise of the institutional critique, which I would say somehow is too readily embraced. This is somehow a step which is too easily taken up. For me, it would be somehow the question how to proceed. Yeah, you can question manifesto, you can question documenta, you can question every kind of biennale, arts biennale. But then the question would be, but what else? How to make something which is otherwise? At some point I would say this kind of articulation which almost is too abstract, which is somehow dealing with the, not just of the question of the usual of the custom culture policy, but which is dealing with much more of it would be needed. And this is the, again, this is the question of infrastructure, not just of the content. And something which I would say was and still is maybe for us here in Eastern Europe quite unique experience, that much of the institution which came from that so-called alternative context in the 90s and during that first phase of the transition processes in Eastern Europe have actually regained at some point this representative function. And for us, it's not just like that to sit, I don't know, in London, Paris or New York and then to say, oh, yes, we are completely off the system, because we are not. And but then this is some point, of course, you could say this is our weakness, but for me, at least, it is also a strength. And we are, at some point, we have also then to deal with the question of, for example, of nationalism, which is not just a far-fetched topic, but it's actually always acute. Or you could also think of populism. But then again, you have to take all up discussions in environments which are very small, and even if you do some kind of alternative action, you are really very soon you are perceived as someone who matters. This is, for example, the thing, and not you, not necessarily in commercial value, but you actually somehow perceived as someone who matters in even in cultural and symbolic sense. And there you have, even if you try to be anti-representative, even if you try to be in any kind of post-structuralist, relativist, I don't know how, you're being consumed that by the environment. And this is something I would say is we have to go through. We have to go through, but this, I would say, gives us somehow small epistemic surplus value, which some of our colleagues from the so-called West do not have. Tricky question is, usually I would say that also my own experience is that most of the time, if I have to take up some position towards the artists or theorists within the arts field, I'm really become somehow relying, or I really then rely mostly on my guts and my intuitions, and they are probably react too effective. But what would be the competence, the core competence of the artist or and also theorists within the art? Again, I would say, for me, it would be really somehow utopian position to stand to say yes, but just take maybe one text, maybe just take one artwork. And nevertheless, which domain this is, nevertheless, from which epoch this artwork or this book comes from, take just one, maybe just one example, then but really work through it. And you won't be saved. There's no God, there's no transcendence which will then somehow save you, since you have done so much work for just one example. But somehow you will be really attentive to. You will also somehow have this kind of respect towards the others, so toward the other artworks, toward the other artists, and then at some point it's. And again, now I'm also coming out to the institutional critique discourse. It's could be easily said that the art world as we know it, and this kind of perversion of the art world we have now in the second world or the Eastern, former Eastern Europe, is completely illusionary. It's completely out of everything, and that neither some kind of special knowledge nor some kind of specific practice can bring a change, because everything somehow has been really corrupted from the start. And really, I would say that, this is now really the tough question: do we in Eastern Europe, for example, have a possibility to come back to some kind of precursors who have done maybe similar things within our environment? I would say yes, there are some precursors, so and this kind of mapping has been done, so we know within the arts what was done and which kind of initiatives there were in this environment we live in, so mostly in Eastern Europe. But this is, as I for me, for example, as a philosopher, within the arts, it's sexy somehow to do kind of mapping. So you can map what was, for example, Eastern European art. But for example, for philosophy, this is almost a thing which is completely out of anything. And I would say, since I was also doing some kind of archaeology of, for example, of Yugoslav philosophy, that this work, it start, is really uncool. So you really can't gain any kind of prominence with the dealing of it, but I would say that there is some kind of gain. There is some kind of really specific attention, specific attitude, specific feeling you can gain out of, for example, reading a text of a communist philosophy from the Eastern Europe. So there is something, I would say, and maybe it should be also noted that if we would like to make a canon of texts of the 20th century aesthetics or political theory or that also for us here it would be necessary not to do away with all of those things that were written here, or actually all those artworks that they were canonical for us. And somehow it is, so we still need those institutions who will actually somehow make those works accessible in the sense that they are materially present. And the problem for us is not actually just of interpretation, but also that at least in some point we really can't access those artworks. And this is somehow, I would say, that the problem of Eastern Europe, that somehow this, not just with the transition, that actually that the transition to capitalism has destructed all of the tradition, but actually that also somehow within communism there was this very low attention towards preserving something, not in the sense of conservationism, but somehow of preserving something which matters. Yeah, but it's actually then again interesting. At the point where artists somehow, where theorists somehow try to escape from theory, this is a sense of all the man is the theory is anti-theory, actually everybody else, so beside the theorist, wants to embrace theory as something which is sacred, which gives some kind of additional value. And this point, for me as a theorist, is marvelous in the sense that I really wonder why that is so. Is it somehow for all of the others who are not in that professional sense theorists, is theory something for them is a kind of a promise of a shibboleth, of a catchword, which gives them something valuable for their lives? And really, I don't know. I would say for me, someone, and then I'm very often in a position that some artists approach me and then ask, what could you advise me, what give you some, maybe even to do something together. Mostly for me it's really that to say, maybe just be not too cautious, or not even, that I do not say to people, this is maybe too high for you, or this is too abstract. Because I would say the level of abstraction that has been reached within arts itself is enough and is really comparable to the level of abstraction which has been reached in theory. So in that sense, the reflection which comes from the art practices itself is again that high that at some point even it don't it does not need theory as such. And so in some sense I would say, again as I have said several times, for entry point into a theory it could be really just one book, one phenomena, one specific topic, and you don't need to actually open this, not just this Pandora box of theory, but it's not necessary. Actually, I would say it's really not necessary to make this kind of 2000 recapitulation again and again of the 2500 years of European history from the Greeks on, and then coming back and doing all the, and then also mostly then falling into some kind of cliches of romanticism. We don't need it, I guess, and we actually we also don't have the time. And for institutions like mine, where you actually are having really tight resources, you have to be efficient. You have somehow to try to be in that sense really materialist. To know that to be aware that you are really intervening in somehow in very poor conditions. And in that sense, it's really of utmost importance that you really just get really the very concise and concentrated and intense book. Which really, I would say, even with reading one book, but really doing it well, for me, it's enough. It's not just saying it. It's actually for me. It's like what I would say. Yeah, it would be the philosopher's stance. And actually, you could say that this example of, for example, one book. This example, yes, this is something which in recent time Jacques Rancière has done so prominently he's now also in the book, which was translated into English, so The Ignorant Schoolmaster. You really just maybe you have somehow to train the will, not the intellect. And if you are up to trying to train and to emancipate the will, there's just one. Not even it does not need even to be a book. It could be really just one phenomenon which collectively is being observed, and some kind of collective will has been focused to, and that you really gain this kind of new knowledges. But again, in that sense, Rancière's in that sense is really nothing new. And I would say, if you do, for example, I suggested Plato's dialogue. If you just really take them seriously, Socrates' proceedings there, it could be easily, maybe even better than Rancière, or better than Badiou, better than Agamben. And that's something. But again, also if you, for example, read Schiller, so if you read then German idealism, it would be also then again the same also with Kant or Hegel. But really just in a sense, not in a sense that everybody is interchangeable, that nothing matters, that there are no differences. But in a sense that you, if you really somehow want to get this entry point in this, yes, we call it theory as such, that somehow you just one thing is needed. So your attention, your really will that you proceed. And this for me then is important. But again, I would say that artists do not need to diminish themselves. That the level of rationalization, that the level of reflexivity which was gained throughout the arts history is so high that at some point even, I would say, theory is really not necessary to legitimate those kind of practices. And especially with the conceptual artists and within all the historical avant-garde, arts have really climbed a very, very steep mountain of abstraction, of emancipation, which at some point, arts in that sense have really done something which, for example, theory probably has not done. So in that sense, I'm not in that sense essentialist to say, you have now to read Hegel and then to quote everything which Hegel has said. But actually that maybe you just, for example, you take up the road of, I don't know, reading Phenomenology of Spirit, and at some point maybe you see what was his driving behind, what was the intention behind of the way of thinking. Not necessarily of that formulas of Hegel, Plato, Rancière, or anybody else. Maybe I'm still not sure. So actually, the only art which I was interested in practically was music. So, but I failed as a musician. So it's I do not know. It's if we could say that it's completely analogous. So that maybe also. The theory's engagement with arts could be somehow empowered by way of dealing practically with art. I'm not sure. So, but again, for if you take up this example of or this promise of artists dealing more seriously with theory, again, really, I would say it's maybe even not, and maybe even, and this is, for example, the point which Jacques Rancière has made really prominent. This person who introduces, who is the teacher of those, who is of those people coming to something, could even be ignorant, totally ignorant. This is probably in that sense really the most brilliant book which has been published in philosophy now in the last decade or two. That and this was and this is kind of utopian promise which Rancière states that. Even the person who is teaching the others, I don't know, how to read Hebrew, how to read Greek, what is astronomy, what is French, or what is something else, that even that person, which is teacher of them, does not have to know anything about it. And that even maybe it's better that this teacher is completely ignorant, even more ignorant than those persons who are willing to gain something. But then again, Rancière's point is a really wonderful point. To somehow, it's not the question of how to train the intellect. It's not actually just how to train logical and epistemic even maybe of our own rational capacities. That's actually the question, how to train our attention, how to train our discipline, how to train our will somehow, that it then at some point gets completely free. And I would say, so this would be for me the one of the nicest description that has been found of the educational process within philosophy, but not just within philosophy, but also within the broader social context. Actually, for most of the theoretical arts, of the philosophical activities which I'm pursuing, so maybe the inspiration, so the local inspiration, they're the really heterodox Marxist philosophers from the 60s and 70s, so Yugoslav Marxist philosophers, who actually have done something which was quite remarkable for the context of Eastern Europe, and this was somehow to read both heterodoxically Marx and Heidegger. This was kind of very pathetic, very kind of heroic, old European style of thinking, very much engaged with all those metaphysical concepts, neglecting mostly the question of gender, maybe even class. This was kind of really of high academic theory, but somehow it had some kind of appeal of something which was called during the 60s, it was called the Dionysian socialism. So this kind of discourse. But then again, when we started with our activities within the Multimedia Institute, we had also our references also the magazine Arxing from the 90s in Zagreb. This was also a very prominent reference. But again, we have found out that actually all of those references are actually gone, that they are really past. That, for example, those Marxist philosophers during the 60s or 70s, that now, not just that theory is something different, that we conceive of theory today something different than they, but that actually it's really past. And also with regards of Arxing and of our colleagues who have done a marvelous job during the 90s, we have actually seen that our position is really completely otherwise, and that our main focus have to shift. And what we have done now in the last 3 years, and this was the project which I was head of, was a project entitled Yugoslavia as a Biopolitical Experiment. We actually wanted to try somehow to recuperate, to make a kind of intellectual archaeology of those practices which today's theory would call biopolitical, but somehow that those theorists like Foucault, Agamben, Negri, and others have not depicted. And it was actually our wish somehow to say that if there was a path to empire, if so Negri and Hart will say, that this path, this way to empire in European modernization and then on world modernization was not just that univocal, it was not just the Western way, but that actually there was also a very specific Eastern communist or Eastern socialist way to the globalization, to that which Negri and Hart calling empire. And we have to actually try to show that there are, if you take up the economic theorist of socialism, legal theorist of socialism, also philosophers and sociologists, that there was actually some sense, at least from the 70s on, that our societies now are really becoming that which is in constant flux, which actually somehow equals to that postmodern societies, but are not quite that. This quite this small difference of the Eastern Europe, or actually how Eastern Europe got into globalization, was actually for us interesting, and also maybe of the ways how Eastern Europe has tried to solve those contradictions of the globalization. Somehow, our point was, and for us the important point was, how it was possible somehow, how it was possible that for a state, as Yugoslavia, which was defined constitutionally by a declaration to abolish the state. How a state actually which tries to make this transition from a state to a non-state society, what does it mean that this state dissolves and that gets into something which is called a transition, just a transition into liberal capitalism? And for us it was actually important to refer to it, and maybe to even to observe that this communist transition from state society to a non-state society is even more interesting or even a primary one. And that this transition is even maybe actually more utopian or somehow at least promises us some utopian potential, which is completely lacking in transition just today, when the concept of transition is just used to depict the transition to liberal capitalist society. So this was actually our project, and next year this project shall be also published in the US.